Welcome to Rock That Relationship, a podcast about all things relationship with Corey and Tracy.
Now let's get real and start creating relationships that rock.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Rock That Relationship. We are in season 14, all about friendships, which is a lot of fun to talk about. And today's episode is all about deepening your friendships, whether that's a casual one you want to become closer or a close one that you just want to stay close. So let's talk a little bit about deepening your friendships. So Tracy, what would you say about your friendships? Do you think you have a handful of deep friendships?
Yes, a handful of deep friendships.
Just
and I do well. I would consider other people good friends, like, but we don't talk that much or see each other that much. But if we probably had more time, we would. Like people who I hang out with, and then I'm like, oh, we really like each other, and we really can. I'm sure in a pinch rely on each other, right? But we're not really in those kind of circles, you know?
Right.
Do you know what I mean?
So can you have a deep friendship with someone that you don't talk to very often, but when you do talk to them, it's deep?
Yes. Don't you agree?
I do. Yeah. I mean, I have some friends that I don't talk to very often, but it's like when we connect, you know, some people say, oh, when you connect, it's like not a day has passed, but it's also really deep and we can share things and be really honest and vulnerable, even if I haven't talked to them in like a year.
Yeah. That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like there's no weird, like, oh, it has to be small talk or keep it superficial or anything like that. Like people I really like, but I just don't have time and they don't have time, you know?
Right. But that friendship's still there. You know, it's still there.
Like if I moved in next door to them or moved in their neighborhood or moved even their part of town, then we'd probably spend more time together. But it's just people are busy.
Right. So, but
I don't take that personally. Like, yeah. I don't, it doesn't matter to me. I don't care if I never see them.
Or if I only never see your friends.
No, I don't. If I only see them on Facebook. Like, I don't care. It doesn't matter to me.
So, like, you could never see me again and you'd be okay with it?
If we talked on the phone, I'd be fine. Oh. It's like, are you offended? Like, I don't need to do things with people. That's what I'm saying. When I do something with someone, it's got to be dual purpose. So we have to be hiking. We have to be doing something. But I have a lot of friends that I don't ever see. But like, if I got on the phone with them or I do get on the phone with them, the conversation's great. And it's like, yeah, we don't waste time with stupid stuff. And they're telling me about their life and I tell them about mine. But I don't have the time.
Yeah.
Like we're going to Seattle in 2 weeks and I just became exhausted at the thought of even trying to meet up with people. I don't want to, I'm not going to make any effort whatsoever.
Okay.
I can't, we're staying with my best friend and that's it.
Okay.
I can't do it. I don't have it in me. Like if we just get to the, you know, we bought these passes that are Seattle passes, like to see five things. And if we go to the ocean or we go to the San Juans, then I'll feel that I have accomplished everything I need to accomplish. And a friend reached out and I had reached out to her before and was like, oh, we have to get together. And then I said, I just don't know if I can do it.
Okay. I mean, it's a time thing, but you did say that you do talk on the phone with people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you keep your friendships going like that, or where you communicate with them. They're not just like, you don't talk to them for 25 years or something. You stay in touch somehow.
Although I do think there are those people that you could run into, people from law school, people from, you know, early on in the police. I mean, that's the thing. The last time I went back, I did have lunch, but I was by myself and I had, I think 17 hours or 19 hours on the layover. So it was me by myself packing it in with people. That was fine, but I can't do that with four other people with me. I'll have a nervous breakdown.
Okay.
It's just too much to try and pack it in. You know what I mean?
Well, yeah. I mean, that makes sense from a time perspective, but
like, what's the vacation for everybody? Like, I have to take into consideration also who wants to be spending time with people they don't even know.
Yeah.
I know these people.
You would never want to go and just grab coffee with someone while the rest of them went and did something for an hour.
No, I'll never do that.
Okay.
I'm not that kind of person. I wouldn't do that. No, we're together. We're doing things together. I mean, we're staying in my best friend's house, so yeah, we'll get good quality time with her, you know?
Right, right. Okay.
But maybe we'll just do that. Like, maybe we'll just chill. We'll just do a few activities, and maybe we'll just enjoy the company of being in her house and making her dinner and eating outside, you know?
Right.
And maybe just hanging out locally and not even trying to push it, because at this point, driving so far, like, I was thinking about that, trying to get three kids onto kayaks out into the ocean. I mean, is that something I really want to do to myself?
I don't know.
Wouldn't it be great if we saw orcas? But one said he would freak out if he saw them, and like, he didn't mean freak out in a good way, but in a bad way. And I'm like, do I want to do that to myself? I've already seen the orcas. I've already been out in the ocean. Do I need to do it again?
Right.
What
right.
if one goes overboard? That water's freezing cold. So,
well, that is true. So, okay. You know. All right. So we're talking about this idea of deepening friendships. So you can have these friends that you have these kind of deep connections with. You don't necessarily need to see them. And some of them you don't even necessarily need to call or text on a frequent basis, because they're still going to be your close friends.
Yes. I mean, close friends in that, like, I mean, that's the thing. I have a friend from college in Illinois who lives in Seattle who, you know, we've seen each other a handful of times over the years, but when she was really struggling, like, she reached out to me, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so that's the kind of, I'm fine with that. Okay. I really don't ever need to see anybody again. I've decided.
Says,
thank you. This conversation.
Says Tracy Wood on the season All About Friendships. I don't need to have any of them, and I don't need to see any of them or talk to any of them.
I said so. I can have them, but I don't need to see them. I'm like so overwhelmed.
I mean, I don't have to see my friends all the time, but I do like to stay in contact.
You like, yeah, but you also like to do things. Like, you like to, yeah. You're a doer of things. Like, you know what I mean?
I do like to get together. And
yeah, yeah. I only like to do what I want to do when I want to do it.
Yes, yes, I'm aware.
I'm very much like that, yeah.
I'm very aware of that.
Yeah, and I don't like to plan ahead, or I'm incapable of planning ahead. That's what I should say.
Okay. All right, well, you know, as usual, I'm like on the total opposite end of the spectrum.
Right.
You know, like, I plan, I make friend dates with people, I cultivate those relationships. I try not to do small talk with friends. I try to talk about meaningful things. I try to open up and be vulnerable and trusting of them, and they do that with me. So I have a lot of close friends that we talk about a lot of really, really important things. And so some people have maybe that one friend that they do that with, you know, and
yeah.
My case, I hardly have friends that I don't do that with, because if not, I see them as just sort of casual acquaintances.
Right.
But I'm not
you've
even...
had that. You've had that kind of circle. I mean, I don't like that either. I like, that's why I only go to those parties for 10, 20 minutes and I'm gone, because it's not like I have nothing against people, those people or people like that. It's just that I don't have time, you know?
Yeah.
Or I guess I should say, that's not how I want to spend my time.
There you go. That's better. Because when you were single and you're bored off your rocker and you were like watching every Netflix show that ever existed, but then you'd go to a party and stay for 10 minutes. So it's just,
I know. So it's like, I'm that way.
Yeah. It's just how you want to spend your time. And I mean, you know, for me, I don't find big, huge group things very deepening, unless you can kind of, you know, head off with one person and just sort of sit and chat with them. But I like those group things because they bring people together. But I love, as I've mentioned before, the one-on-one stuff. I love having deep conversations with people. And, you know, we always say that, like, Tracy, you're the keeper of my skeletons. But you know what? There's like 50 other people that are the keeper of my skeletons, because I go around and blab to everybody and open up my world to everyone. And then, you know,
and then write a book about it.
And then write a book about it. So nobody's the keeper of anybody's skeletons anymore.
But that's the thing. There's no point in having skeletons. All the skeletons are like a possibility for someone to hurt you. That's what I've told the kids. Like, don't keep secrets, because it'll bite you in the ass. And when you tell your little brother something and then he blurts it out in Sam's Club, I'm like, you know, like, don't expect. That's the thing. I think there are some serious things that adults need to share, you know? I mean, that, okay, let's say someone's preparing to get divorced or something like that from an abusive relationship. But if it's not an abusive relationship, they should talk to their partner first. Like, you know what I mean? Because I think that's wherein the hurt comes in for a lot of people. It's like, talking to other people.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think about if there are circumstances, like, I'm an external processor, and sometimes I don't know what I don't know. So I might need to have a really important conversation with a colleague of mine, for instance, and I have to talk about something, but I'm not sure how to approach it. And so I might go and talk to you first and talk it through,
right,
even though I didn't go to them first, because it helps me figure out like how I'm going to approach it so that by the time I go to them, I can have that conversation. But I think where, you know, where we're talking about skeletons, and I joke about skeletons because I don't have skeletons, because everybody knows right. Everything is really what I'm getting at, the joke of that. But the idea is that if I don't eventually go talk to that colleague and I keep you with all that information, that's when it's not okay. But, you know, so I can share that and talk about it if I need advice or guidance on how to approach it. But if right. You don't eventually go talk to that person, you're in trouble. Or you've talked to like 12 people and they're like the last person to know. That's also right. Relatively problematic.
Yeah. And I think that's like friendship rules or relationship rules, right? To like mm-hmm. be respectful. Yes. You can talk to someone else to try and figure out how to talk to that person, but ultimately you need to talk to that person.
Ultimately. Yeah. And you shouldn't be talking to everybody else but that person.
Right.
You know? But and so that's the thing, is like you and I have processed through a lot of things.
Yes. And it was always helpful, right? Like, that's the thing. It's not like it was a waste of time or if it was done to be backstabbing or something like that. Like, it was literally done to be helpful to process through and figure out, what am I even thinking, you know?
Right, right, right. I mean, that's the thing, is it's helpful to, I guess, make meaning from what you're,
right,
you know, and sometimes I can't make meaning if I'm talking directly to that person.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's hard to do. And you need to do out scenarios, right? I mean, everybody does. But I don't think, like, it has to be without the intention to be, like, forever secretive, in my opinion.
Right, I would agree.
And, like, people would say, like, to me, what do you think that people think of you or whatever? And I'm like, I pretty much know what everybody thinks of me. And when people have accused me of, like, oh, you just have your friends supporting you and backing up what you're saying, and I'm like, you never met my friends, because they're not like that, you know?
Right.
And also, my friends were somewhat too critical at some point. I don't know if you remember that, but like, there were people that I had to say, like, you know, that you can't talk to me like that, you know?
Right. Well, I mean, that's not helpful after a while. And I mean, several years ago, I told you I would back off, and I didn't give you my opinion on anything unless you asked. And so, and then you got all frustrated, and then you wanted my opinion all the time. It was like, now that I wasn't giving it, you wanted it. But
isn't it better to I ask you for it?
Yeah. Cause then I say, are you sure you want to hear it? And then I'll tell you, but I'm not, I hardly give you my opinion on anything anymore. I'm just like, okay, what are you going to do? Or I ask you questions so you can meaning make, because I'm going to assume that you and I are having the conversation because you need to make meaning to go do something with that afterwards. And I'm like a sounding board. But if I'm there trying to convince you otherwise, well, it's not going to work, first of all. And second of all, like, how is that going to help you make meaning if I'm telling you what to do?
Well, and yes, the times I have told you what to do, you completely ignored me. And then you eventually did it exactly what I told you to. And then you did it years later. But that's the thing, is life. Yeah. You have to go through these processes, right? And you are getting something out of whatever it is that you're experiencing and why it's, you know, dragging out.
Right. Well, and that's what I think friends are good for, because they stick around. I remember at one point in time, you were going through something really difficult, and I was really trying to help you in every which way. And finally, you said to me, I just need to talk about this. And I'm going to talk about the same thing over and over and over again until I don't need to talk about it anymore. And it's like, okay, then I'm going to listen. Yeah. And I did for a long time. But that's what you needed. And so I would just be there in that space until you made meaning and you eventually did what I had wanted you to do. It's just that we have to do it in our own time. And our friends are such great sounding boards. If we create some vulnerability and trust and we really lean into people and we, you know, have them help us make meaning, then they, you know, it's wonderful to have these close connections. It's the problem is I, you know, just like you, I've had people that have been so opinionated and critical. And it's like, that's, I don't want that. I need to talk it through. I need to come to that conclusion. Right. And that's frustrating. I know for some friends, we're like, oh my gosh, I see this a million miles away. Why aren't you seeing it?
Yeah. But it does beg the question of what friendship means to each person. Like when you said that you know, I said, okay, I just have to talk about it and then I'll talk about it and talk about it. But you were able to listen. Whereas I had a friend back in the 90s who I went to college with and who also moved to Seattle. And like, we were going to California for her birthday and she was like, and don't talk about this at all. And I was like, you know, okay, like that, it seems so unsupportive, you know, it seemed like, well, that's, it's like you're setting the, what you're going to determine what we talk about. And you're going to determine like what our friendship, it was nothing between us. It was something that I was, you know, sad about. And like, she could not have any space for me to be that way because everything was about her. And we ended up not being friends. You know, we're no longer friends. We haven't been friends for a long time. And part of that was that, you know, there was other things, but they were along the same vein where it's like, oh, you can't be there for that person because you like, oh, it's too annoying to you or too inconvenient for you, you know?
Right. Well, I've had people tell me, they're like, listen, I can't keep talking to you about this anymore. I've already told you what I think you should do. You're not taking my advice. So there's nothing else that I can say. And I'm like, well, you don't need to say anything. What about if you just listened? Or if you did say something, maybe instead of your opinion, you actually asked me some questions to help me come to my own conclusions. That's what I want in a friendship. I don't need you to tell me what you think I should do, not being in my shoes whatsoever, and then being upset that I didn't take your opinion and then saying, okay, well, if you didn't do that, then, you know, it's off limits. We're not talking.
So are you friends with people that do that?
No, I've ended all of those friendships. Yeah.
Because it's not a two-way street. No,
it isn't. And it's like, in some ways, I feel like it's taking advantage of my vulnerability too. Like I've shared something really, really deep and personal and I'm really struggling with something. And the response should be, how can I help? What do you need? Right? Not, here's what you should do. And if you don't do it, I'm not going to talk to you about this anymore. And it's like almost in that ways, I feel like my vulnerability has been hijacked. Like if I would have known that you were going to put some kind of parameters on this, I wouldn't have shared this with you to begin with.
Right.
You know, I would have shared it with the other 49 people that I talked to about everything, but it is exhausting.
That's the thing, right? But that's why have people in your life who aren't going to be supportive in the way that you need them to be. And it'd be different if it was hurting them, right?
Right. If it had to do with them or.
Right. And you're like rubbing salt on their wounds or you were constantly going over stuff that, you know.
Yep.
Like really they couldn't handle. Like it's gore. I mean, you know, people didn't like to hear me about police stuff or whatever. And, you know, I learned that very young, like, don't talk about that stuff when I was a cop. You know, people, oh, what did you do yesterday? Oh, you know, this girl blew her brains out and blah, blah, blah. Like, you know what I mean?
And I mean, and that's also just kind of
about that.
You
stuff.
Read the room because some people get uncomfortable with that. But like, if it was something very personal to you, like that was something you were talking through it, and this particular incident had such a profound effect.
Well, people
on you.
Are really upset about that stuff, though. Also, that like, you know, that when somebody's going through something hard, they're like incapable of being there.
Yeah, that happens a lot when people are getting divorced and they turn to their friends and they want to have these conversations with their friends, and their friends are like, ugh. Okay, here comes Josie. Yeah. She's getting divorced. Right. Avoid her. And that happens. And it's not malicious necessarily. It's just like, either they don't want to be brought down with it or they don't, you know, they don't know what to say. That's also the
awkward
thing.
Well, that's a lot. People don't know what to say when someone's dying. Someone's close to them dying or the person's dying themselves. And, you know, like I had that experience where I saw my aunt on the couch. This is probably in the 70s, maybe it was the 80s. It was 70s or early 80s, and I still can't get over it. Like, I saw her, and she looked like a toothpick with a cotton ball. You know, she's bald, and I freaked and turned him. It looked like a skeleton on the couch, you know? And, like...
Did you talk to her?
I don't remember if I talked to her before she died or not. She died very soon after that. And, like, but the way I acted... And I was a child, so I certainly don't criticize. I'm not like criticizing myself, but I'm very like aware, and I have been for the rest of my life, like to share, I mean, this is real verbiage that I never use, but to hold space for those things that are difficult for people and to be there. And I have people say like, it's really helpful. And you know, I'm very familiar with death now, and I've spent my life doing things that are difficult. So divorce, abuse, death, all that. And so I can be there for that. We've talked about this before, that I don't feel exhausted by that.
Yeah.
Well, I feel some exhausted people might... by making plans, but I don't feel exhausted by like that. But it bothers people. Yeah. Like, Yeah. They only want to do like smell the roses.
Right.
And you know, then, that when they're spending time with somebody else, they don't want to be it to be a bummer. But I don't feel that way. I feel very differently, you know.
But then on the flip side of that, there are times when like it's like, oh gosh, I've got this horrible thing going on and I want to hang out with people, but I don't think that they want to carry my burden. So I just keep it to small talk because I don't want them to be exhausted of me. So I, in some ways, censor myself, right? Like, oh, don't bring up the breakup again, or don't bring up my mom's death again, or whatever it is, because I don't want to exhaust people. But there might be people out there that are like you, that are like, bring it. Let's talk about
right.
it, you know?
And, right. Right.
And it's hard. I mean, once you get these, you know who your friends are and you know how receptive they are to those things, more likely are to talk about that kind of stuff with them. But that isn't really deepening the friendship. I feel like if you have to like block off what you're going to talk about with them, or they're going to block off what they want to talk about with you, or what they're willing to listen to, you're not going to get to a deep place of connection.
I'm on this group thread for the networking group I'm in, and somebody's trying to leave, not go to the gala, which is coming up, because apparently she had a breakup and she, you know, articulated this, that she just did, like, she was looking for, does anyone want these tickets? And somebody's like, why are you trying to get out of this? And what's happening? And so it was like disclosed over a series of texts that it was a breakup. Right. And they were like, well, this is exactly the reason for you to come, because we're all going to be there. We're going to be together. A bunch of them are going solo. And they're like, that's why you should come out. You know what I mean? They said that, literally wrote that, like, that's why you should come. Because we're here to be supportive of you. It doesn't mean that they can't go and have a good time, but they, knowing that that's what she's going through, and she's still going to come out because it'll make her be, you know, like, she may not feel upbeat, but by going out, she may feel happier, but not hiding a secret. So I like that. Like, you know, she's not going and then she starts, you know, sulking off or crying or whatever. People know. So,
right.
People are aware. So when she comes, okay, she's coming, and, you know, we need to be supportive of her. It's a very nice thing to witness.
It's really cool when people can do that, and they say come, and then they, you know, and not forcing her, making her feel bad for not coming, because she may also choose that's not how she wants to spend her time. But it is nice, because then you're not kind of harboring this secret. It was like, you know, the worst times to hang out with me are right after a breakup. And, you know, because that's all I want to talk about. I'm an external processor. And so it's like, oh, that's got to be exhausting for some people. But there are people that continue to come out. How are you? How are you? Checking in on me, you know, like, and sometimes people don't know what to say. Like, the weirdest thing is, like, when my mom was in the hospital before she died, and then when she died, it was like people didn't know what to say. So when some of them avoided me, or some of them talked about other things, not because they're bad friends, they just didn't know how to show up. But the ones that did the best were the ones that were like, what do you need? What do you need from me? And remember what I told you when you said, what do you need from me? I said,
just come up and go on a walk in a horrible place with trash everywhere.
I know, but it was the place near my mom's house.
Right.
I know. But the whole thing was, I said, I just need you to walk with me. Like, it was like, if we can just do that for people to strengthen those bonds, like, what do you need? How can I help?
Right.
That's all we need to do. Stop giving advice. How can I help?
Well, and just ask. And, you know, maybe you can't be there for that dirty hot walk, but maybe you can be on the phone for it.
Right. Exactly.
You know, you can be there in other ways. And I feel like that's the thing. It's really not maybe that you can always do what the person wants, but that you make an effort, or that it seems that you care.
Right. Exactly. Yeah, I would agree. So how do you kind of create that deep, meaningful space? Like, how do you get close to friends? I think I know the answer to this for you, only because I know you, but like, do you just sort of spill yourself, and then it creates an environment where they kind of spill themselves back to you, or do you build up to that? Like, how do you create deep connections?
I think everybody knows who I am right when they meet me. And that's like, I'm extra. I'm too much for some people, and that's fine. I don't care. So I feel like I just show up as the authentic person that I am. And that it just naturally happens. Am I wrong? Do you see it some other way?
No, I mean, I think so too. And then I guess the gauge would then be who doesn't who sticks around and wants to reciprocate. Right. And then that's how you know, like you immediately, I think you immediately trust people with lots of your information. I mean, you have at least where you've shared lots of opinions about things. You're not shy about sharing your politics. You're not shy about sharing your feelings about a specific incident that may have happened or whatever. You're pretty straightforward. And so it basically tells other people, like, you can be straightforward with me too. So I think you model that and then that gets reciprocated. Whereas I know other people just sort of build up to that. Like, they'll get to know someone and then they'll be like a couple months in, like, oh yeah, I never told you that I,
right,
you know, blah, 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 whatever it is. But I don't think you're like that at all.
No. And I think that that's like served me well, you know, that you were there the night that I met my wife in person. I'd already met her online very briefly, but like we ended up talking outside for a long time and it was a lot of her talking, but apparently I was, you know, I was listening and I was not judgmental. And like that was a very deep conversation, you know, mm-hmm. night one. And so like, I just have to be myself. I really don't care. And then I don't know with other people, it's like, are they afraid to be themselves? Are they afraid that other people aren't going to like them if they're themselves? Are they afraid? You know, what is it that mm-hmm. Why do people act differently than what they are? I just am what I am. And I may be cranky and I'll tell you that probably. I'm cranky, you know, like,
mm-hmm.
but I don't show up as a different person different times. And there are people which, you know, you don't know which one of them are showing up or
right.
Reserve people. I don't do well with reserve people.
Yeah, like people where it takes a lot to kind of crack the egg.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know, for whatever reason, it does not work for me. Like authenticity and vulnerability and honesty works for me.
Yeah. And receiving that in return. I mean, I know some people are reserved because, you know, they've been burned.
Yeah.
They don't know who they can trust and are kind of dipping their toe in the water. That's not me. I've been burned so many times and I just keep jumping right in because I'm like, you know what? You're going to be burned. That's how life works. Right. People are going to burn you. That's how it happens. So I show up authentically. I show up different than you do, but we both have the same kind of underpinning, right? Where it's like, here's who I am. Like, I don't care. I'm sitting out here on this podcast. Here's who I am. I tell people when I meet them, here's who I am. I show them who I am. I'm put it in my book and I, you know, my partner was mentioning something to me the other day because she's listening to all the episodes of the podcast in a row. And she said, you know, one of the remarkable things is that you are so incredibly consistent. She said, the way you showed up in like episode one, season one is the way you're showing up in like current stuff. She said, your feelings, your opinions on things, not that they can't change and morph and grow, but she said, you have a consistency in what you share and who you are. So it's like people feel that authenticity. And then I tend to be around the people that match that, right? Like they want to do the same.
Yes, I would agree with her. I mean, that's one of your things, right? And that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not, okay, which version of Corey am I going to get? It's not like you're always the same and you're boring. It's that you're consistent. That's kind of who you are across the board, you know?
Mm-hmm. People know what to expect from me.
Yeah.
And as far as like friendship, people know what to expect. People know that I'll be there for them in the way that they want. But that I also have pretty clear boundaries and I don't mess around with that either. So, I mean, I'm pretty straightforward.
But I do think that that's a thing, like when you were saying that, yes, you've been burned and you know, you'll be burned and all that. And that is something that really attracted me to my wife is that I know she's been burned like in big ways, but she's still open and vulnerable and, mm-hmm. you know, like, and not bitter. She's remarkably not bitter for what she's been through. And like, is that a personality trait? Is it something that people learn? Is it something that they learn? You know, she and I match on that, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if you can learn that. I assume you can. I mean, there was that, I was really into that resilient stuff that was said, that doctor who was in the Holocaust, Edith, I'll have to look it up again, but Dr. Edith, and I have to look up what her book name is, but all about resilience and about like what you just said, like life is not going to give us necessarily what we want. And so we choose how to show up. Now I have to look it up. Right. What is her name? But you know what I'm talking about? Like,
right. We choose our reactions too. Like these things right. are going to, we can't control what's going to happen in many ways. And so we can control the way that we react and respond to it.
Right. Her book is called The Choice by Dr. Edith Eger. And she chose. I mean, she went through the worst of the worst of the worst. You know, her parents died in the Holocaust. She was in the Holocaust. And like, she was like, well, I'm still alive. So I have to just, like, I have to make a choice. Am I going to let them destroy every last minute of my life? You know? So she works with a lot of like soldiers with PTSD and stuff like that.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing is if you go around and you're constantly putting walls up because you've been burned by this person or burned by that person, then it is really hard to let people in. And it's really hard for other people to want to let you in because you're so protected all the time. And that's the thing. It's like, I'm like, oh, I fail. I get up. I get burned. I go back out there. It's like, I don't know what that is. I don't know if that's resilience or persistence or stupidity sometimes. I mean, it's a lot of things, right? But it's this idea that the only way you're going to have this like deep forged connection with someone, according to Brené Brown, is if you have some vulnerability in that. You have to have stake in it. If you just sit around and talk about the weather, you're not going to create connections that, I mean, those are the weak ties we've talked about, and those are important. Right. But those long-lasting, deep, thriving friendships aren't going to come from it if you never take it beyond that surface level.
Right. And I mean, that Brené Brown thing did go viral for a reason, because it touched something inside of people. And that's the thing about that movie, Remarkably Bright Creatures, is so good about the so many layers of connection and how, I mean, these people, the main character is vulnerable with an octopus, you know, but not with other people around her.
Right, right.
You know,
maybe it's good practice. I know I've heard of it, like where people are vulnerable with their pets. Like they might actually come home and tell their pets everything about what's going on, but then can't connect with another human. And so the idea is for friendship, maybe if we model the way, right? If we're vulnerable, maybe at least that will invite other people to be vulnerable with us. They may not choose to be, but at least it opens it up and creating like a safe space for them. I mean, how do you, other than showing like that vulnerability and that, like, you know, sharing deep and personal things with people, what are ways that you also can signal to your friends, like, hey, I'm a safe person to talk to? Are there other things that you do?
I have no idea. Are there? Do you think there are? Like, how else?
I mean, no. You know what I do is I ask questions, because I feel like if you just say, okay, you talk to me or whatever, they might not know where to start. But if I ask a question like, how are you feeling today? Right. How are you feeling today? You know, what's one thing that's been on your mind all day? Something like that. And then people will start opening up a little bit, and then they'll go even further. So that's sometimes how I cue to people that I'm okay to talk to, because I ask questions that seem, well, and I am, but it shows them that I'm interested. And that I care. And they start with really like less vulnerable ones, right? Like, you know, how are you feeling today versus like, how do you feel about your mom's death? But like, how are you feeling today? And it's like, I'm kind of sad today. Really, what's going on?
Right.
You know, and then you kind of have a lead in. So that's one of the tactics I use to help people feel like safe and comfortable to talk to me.
Well, I feel like, I mean, I guess there's a lot of people who don't ask questions. I'm very much a question. I had a nice conversation with the lady at Kohl's today, the checker outer, you know?
Okay.
A really good one. And she was like a 70 or 80 year old Irish woman. But like, I listen, you know? And then I gave her my card, you know? I have like two of those left. And I was like, just reach out to me, you know?
Yeah.
Like, I try to listen. I think listening. And then if you hear something, you know, you can then connect with them on that.
Right.
Or you share something about yourself right off the bat, you know?
Right. That helps. Yeah. Sharing about yourself, or just find a point of connection. Like, and one of those things is, I know people do this a lot of times because they don't know how to find a point of connection. So they automatically say, oh, I've had that happen to me before. That's not the way you find connection with someone at all, because then what you're doing is you're taking the conversation and you're making it about you. But, you know, you can say something like, you know, just, oh, okay, well, tell me a little bit more about that. I had something like that happen, but, you know, I want to know about your experience. Like, keep the focus on them about it. But some people will be like, they almost try to play like victim Olympics too. Like someone's going through, like I've seen this happen and people don't mean it intentionally. They're just trying to connect. Someone's like, oh my gosh, you know, I had to put my dog down yesterday. And then someone's like, well, it could have been worse. I mean, my dad died 2 months ago and blah, blah, blah. And now, next thing you know, you're playing victim Olympics and you were supposed to do it as a point of connection. Like we both were experiencing death of a loved one and that's what that person was trying to do. But all of a sudden they derailed that conversation and now the other person shuts down and like, I'm not going to tell you about my dog because you just stole this. Now all you want to do is talk about your dad. And again, usually those don't come from like narcissistic behaviors or manipulative behaviors. They're just people trying to connect and they don't know how. Especially with uncomfortable stuff. So they try to find a similar experience and connect it. And it sometimes comes off as like, I'm trying to one up you when that's not what people are doing.
Well, I also think that's a lack of like being taught how to do that. Like this has happened several times the last couple of weeks where we're having dinner or driving and either I tell a story or somebody else tells a story and then one of the kids just launches into something else. And I'm like, can you stop for a second and like acknowledge what that person just said? Mm-hmm. And then they'll be like, wow. Okay. And then in my game, you know, and I'm right. Like, God, right. But like, I'm like, maybe if they're never taught that, and I think a lot of people aren't, I always think, oh, it's going to be so easy to fix this world. And then you look around and there's so people are lacking connection because I don't think a lot of them are taught or they're raised in places where, you know, who knows what's happening, but you do have to teach children a lot of that stuff. You know, they don't know it naturally. Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. They don't know to ask someone how they're doing. I always like it because my daughter, she will, when we talk and I ask her how school was that day or whatever was going on, she's like, how was your day? What did you do today? And then she'll ask me questions and it's like, okay, that's really cool because now we have a reciprocal conversation. But even with kids, sometimes people think that it should be a one-way street. Like the parent asks the kid all about how school was and what they did and all that stuff and then let them off the hook when it comes time for them to ask the parent. And they're like, oh, that's just okay. And really what they should be doing is saying, okay, now what I want you to do is I want you to think of one question you want to ask me. What would you like to ask me about my day? And then, but
well,
you can't.
That's it. Yeah. Right. The boys are very good about that. Like when you come in and asking you about your day, like they have to be, has to come in the home.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, and people have to be taught that. So you can even say like, other than asking me, how was your day? What other kind of question might you ask me? And then like, you know, it could even be that my daughter's like, oh, I remembered you were going to the dentist. How was the dentist? Like, then they have to sort of conjure up other points of connection. But it's amazing how many adults don't know how to do this.
Well, so, maybe they don't want to. Do they not know?
I don't know.
I mean, I'm sure a lot of them don't know, and then they don't want to.
Right. It's probably a combination of the two. Some of them don't have any interest in how you are. I remember talking to someone one time and I said, well, ask me some questions, right? Ask me some questions about my day or my life or my experience. And the other person was like, well, I don't really need to know. Like, I'm not really that interested. And I was like,
was that a person you were close to?
Yeah, I was a close friend. And I was like, well, okay. And then I said, okay. I said, you do know that the reason that people ask questions isn't really for transactional purposes. It's not so you can find out information. I mean, sometimes it is like, what time are you coming over tonight? That's a transactional question. But when you ask someone how their day was, it's not because you've been sitting around all day wondering how someone's day was. Usually that's not the case. You ask them because it's a signal to them that you care about how their day was. And it's a point of connection. And then when they tell you about their day, then you can connect with them on something else. And then it goes back and forth. But if you're like, I don't really care how their day was. I mean, I said, do you know how many people really don't care about how other people's days are? Like the questions that I ask, I mean, I'd like to think that I care for almost all of them that I ask, but sometimes you just ask them because asking is showing that you care. It's not necessarily that I need that information. It's that I want to show you that I care enough about your response.
Well, that's weird. I mean, doing that with children is one thing, but why would you have to do that with another adult? That's really weird.
Yeah.
If I have to tell another adult to ask me questions,
I know. Well, and I have a friend of mine who says that if they hang out with someone as adults and that person talks about themselves and doesn't ask questions of her and her partner, then they don't hang out with that person anymore. They're like, you know what? If you're not even taking any interest in me or even faking interest in me, I don't want to I'm not going to deepen this connection if it feels already one-sided.
Right. Yeah. Waste of time.
Yeah. But it was amazing how many people she said she'd come into contact with where she's like, nope, didn't move to the next stage because of that. Mm-hmm. So it's like either people don't want to or they don't know how.
Yeah. Interesting. You're the scientist. You figured that out. Is it that they don't want to?
I don't know. I think part of it is that they don't know how. They don't think of it. It's not a priority for them. You know what I mean?
Well, it's interesting when people talk about the loneliness epidemic and elder people being lonely and all that. It's like, is that culturally as well, right? Down the board, that all the ages feel that way, you know? Or the lonely people who are lonely when they're older, is it because they didn't put the time and effort into relationships when they were younger?
Or a lot of people have died.
Yeah.
I mean, the loneliest
generation.
Well,
that's why you keep moving into these communities, right? I mean, that's right. Why they have those communities, one for safety so that you're safer as an older person, but that so that, yeah, when your friends do start dropping off, you've got other friends there.
Yeah, exactly. But what's interesting is the loneliness epidemic has hit Generation Z the hardest. And you know, there's a really big study by Cigna a number of years ago, it was like 3 or 4 years ago, that looked at loneliness across generations and found that Generation Z is actually considered the loneliest generation. And you're like, well, wait a minute, you're young people. You like go to school, you have a whole pot of people to choose from, but the ability to really, truly, deeply connect with someone is difficult. And so you can know a lot of people, you could have a lot of Instagram friends, but if you're not deeply connecting, you start missing out on, you know, like the part that, you know, kind of restricts that loneliness.
What age are those people? Gen Z now?
Gen Z is like high school, college, and early, you know, mid to late 20s. So really like our youth and young adults.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, that's part of the whole point of like connection. And we talk about deepening your friendships is really this idea of these weak ties are important. We've talked about that, but deepening friendships is critical. Like that's the way to combat loneliness.
But I think also with like, especially with that generation, like everything is so like people are getting their information so differently or they're like, you know, when I was a kid, everybody watched the same show on, you know, Thursday night. So you could talk about it and people don't have that now. And they don't have necessarily common points of connection that are positive, you know?
Yeah. And I mean, it's hard too, because like, you know, you look at, I mean, I could go into all my Gen Z stuff, but you know, youth participation in after school programs and clubs and organizations and sports and those kind of things is, you know, is down in most areas. So the places in which people found those connections is gone. And so you have a whole generation of young people that have not been given a lot of the tools for interpersonal connection. And then here we are, like they're coming into adulthood and not knowing even how to make good friends. And that's really tricky. And, you know, and it's hard enough. The further away you get from youth, the harder it is some ways to make friends. And so it's hard to know that there's a whole generation not equipped with the skills that they need to go into that stage. But, okay, so I want to switch gears here for a second because I want to talk more about this vulnerability piece that we've been kind of getting at is this idea of, you know, you and I both have a good way of like showing who we are. We put ourselves out there and then we kind of wait to see who reciprocates, and whoever doesn't, they run off. But have you ever had it the other way around where someone has like opened up so deeply to you, probably more than would be, maybe more than would be socially appropriate, like telling you way too many things early on or making you sort of their one person that kind of carries the load or the burden of their emotional trauma, you know, or someone who's like love bombed you, who just like is so over the top. Like you and I are forces to be reckoned with. I get it. You probably more than me, but we also have, kind of a read the room thing where we know that if we're over the top, we can pull it back. We know not to put too much on somebody, one person too early. Like we can gauge those things, but there are people who can't gauge those and they just either, you know, love bomb you or, they, you know, like I said, they just put all their traumas on you. Have you had that happened particularly like in a new friendship? And then how have you balanced that? Have you actually worked through it and stayed friends or?
Stayed friends? Probably not close friends. I mean, I spot that very early on and so I'm not into it. Sometimes I will entertain it I'll still talk to the person because there's something entertaining about it or something that I like or that I'm getting out of it or we're in an activity together. But no, I can't. That indicates like a certain condition that I don't do well with.
Yeah. We used to joke about it being called for you the wounded deer syndrome. It's like you have someone who's like almost like an acquaintance, could be a friend. And as you're getting to know them, all of a sudden you're kind of drawn to them because they have all these like traumas and problems and issues. And you're like, you become somehow their sounding board or therapist. And it doesn't become a friendship. It becomes more of a therapy relationship.
Which I like, but that doesn't bother me. But that's different. I think that you're talking about two different people. The wounded deer is different.
But are you friends with the wounded deers? Does that lead to like the kind of deep friendship?
Sometimes yes. Yeah. And sometimes no. But I think what you're describing is, you know, a borderline personality disorder where if people come on too strong, like, and there's too much and they're offering too much and they're too invasive and they're, you know, that's different. Because and when it's that way, it's not two-sided. Because I mean, automatically, if I feel bad, I need to put up guards. Because those are the kind of people that actually try to hurt you. And I do have the book called Five Types of People Who Can Ruin Your Life. That's different than the wounded deer. The wounded deer requires a lot of time and effort. But I don't care because it doesn't bother me. It doesn't bother me to give of myself. Now, if the wounded deer turns on you, that's a different story. And the wounded deer and the borderline personality may have a crossover. And I'm not saying people who are borderline personalities or are bad people or have that are bad. It's just a more difficult thing to deal with. And generally, they cause conflict where they go. And so they do enjoy disrupting a friend group. They do enjoy sticking it to you at some point.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Like, those people... I mean, I don't want to be rude, but there are people who are highly represented in the criminal justice system and family in high conflict family law situations that I wouldn't be friends with, even though I could tolerate them and be around them, but they're too dangerous. That's different. The wounded deer is different.
I guess for me, they're different in their intent, but the outcome or the impact on me is very much the same. Is they're like dementors and they suck everything out of me. Whether the wounded deer is that they're just piling it on me as a more of like I'm their therapist, or this love bomber person who, you know, I basically say like they're emotional U-hauling with me. Like they just show up and they're like my BFF after like 2 days. And then they're taking from me too, because it's like, wait a minute, hold on. And so... they're different, but I feel like for me, they have a very similar impact. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute.
Right.
Hold on.
Right. And that's the thing. They have a different impact on me, whereas they don't affect me the same. But you have to be able to recognize that right away.
Yeah.
To protect yourself.
Well, yeah. And not in a way that's like what we talked about earlier about having like walls up and being like unnecessarily guarded. But this is more like there are people out there that are fast friends, that are people that all of a sudden, next thing you know, they're like, you're
go-to. Yeah, all you have to do is watch My Worst Ex or My Worst Roommate, all that on Netflix. And I mean, seriously. And that's the thing, is that people like that tend to come on very strongly. And then it ends up being worst case scenario. I mean, I could watch My Crazy Ex or My Worst Ex all day long.
Yeah.
It's a wealth of knowledge about what's happening out there. It makes me count my lucky stars. But I do see some of that, you know, and I was with someone who wouldn't even, like, won't talk to those people, won't have anything. Like, as soon as, like, she would see it, done, not going to talk to them.
Yeah.
But that was because her job, you know, involved treating people like that. And so it's just, it would be exhausting in your personal life. Whereas I found some of it amusing. But she thought I was naive to what was going on with the person, but I wasn't. It's just that I found some of it amusing. I think as long as you can protect yourself, you know?
Right. Or distance yourself or whatever, not own it or not rely on their emotions or, you know, the problem was, is that, you know, for me, I match vibes very quickly with people. So if they have a high vibe, I match their high vibe. But if they have a low vibe, I can get sucked down into the low vibe very quickly. Right. So that effect on me is just like, oh gosh, it's heavy.
Well, yeah. And then you tend not to, I think now you're realizing like how the high vibe needs, you have to be having the same vibrational, you know, frequency with people. Otherwise it does bring you down.
Right.
It doesn't bring me down.
Yeah. See, both of those are problematic for me. I want to be there and listen to someone to help friends through things. That feels totally different to me, like asking right. questions and helping the meaning make and all that.
Right.
But when there's some that just suck you dry, like the only time they ever call is when they need something. And they're like, but you're my best friend or whatever. And it's like, gosh, that's exhausting. They're not necessarily right. there for you or in the sense like this emotional U-hauling where all of a sudden you meet somebody and they are like, really familiar and they're like your best friend all of a sudden. And it's like, that's also kind of strange.
Right. You have to be cognizant of that. And you have to put a pause. And I told you this in the past and you didn't listen to me because everyone has to learn their own lessons, but hopefully going forward, you would see that. Right.
Right.
Because it is amazing. Like when I was a cop and then the lawyer, it's like, oh my God, do these people just read the same book over and over that, you know, how to like be an abuser, how to mess with people, how to whatever, how to like mm-hmm. exploit people. So you have to be aware enough, you know, this is the hard part of living, right? Like you have to be aware that like there are people out there who will use friendship or relationships to exploit you.
Yeah. And then, there's some people who do it without even realizing that they're doing it. That's just how they're right. programmed, right? As like a right. human. And, you know, it's always interesting to me, like when I meet people, friends or people I'm interested in dating or whatever, I always say like, who are your best friends? Tell me about your best friends. Even just a friend. I'll say, tell me about right. like your best friends. How long have you known them? What kinds of things do you do together? Or how do you connect? Or just, you know, and I have... You know, I've been in situations where I've met people who like, I'm their only friend. I'm like, who are your other friends? Don't you keep in touch with anybody? And like, no. And I mean, there's nothing wrong with that if you're listening to this and you're thinking that. But for other people, it can be a little bit of a red flag. Like how are you in your, like me, I'm in my 50s. How would I meet somebody in their 50s who doesn't have a friend? You mean you don't have a friend from high school or a friend if you went to college or a friend from work or just a neighbor? Like you don't have any friends? Or the friends you have, you've only had for a couple months. Every time I've run into that where people are sort of new to friendship in general, and they put a lot of stock in me, I've seen it every single time it's gone south. And then we're not friends anymore. And then they go on to make a new set of friends. And I would venture to say that probably happens with the new set of friends. That's why there's a turnover, right? But it's hard because I also know that even though I've been burned, I don't want to put up, like you're talking about walls, like I don't want to block people out that I have a good reciprocal relationship right. or potential for that. But I also want to make sure that I'm putting up boundaries to say like, no, I will not be taken advantage of.
Yeah. Smart.
Yep. Well, we've covered a lot of ground today, as usual, everything from how to deepen our friendships to how to sort of protect ourselves from friendships that are not helpful or healthy and unreciprocal, but mostly really this idea about really the importance of being vulnerable and modeling that for other people, asking important questions, really showing that we care. And so anyways, any final parting thoughts, words of wisdom, Tracy?
I would say, I mean, you have to, it's like honing any other skill, right? So making friends, having relationships, it's a lifelong, to me, learning experience, you know? Mm-hmm. And there's all kinds of people out there. I mean, I feel like I have really good judgment and intuition, and I feel like people need to trust their intuition more, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's okay to like not, you don't have to be friends with everybody.
No, I agree you know? With you. And
you don't have to have the kind of friends that other people have, or you don't have to, like, if you don't want to, you don't want to. That's okay.
Right.
You know?
Yes. And if something isn't working for you, it's okay to move along. We'll talk about this later on in the season, but it's okay. But it's important to be able to pick and choose who you want to deepen those connections with. and making sure that's healthy and reciprocal.
Exactly. See, final words.
All right. Excellent. All right. So for everyone out there, until our next episode, go out there and rock those relationships. If you liked what you heard, check out our show notes for resources from today's episode. Make sure to follow us on Facebook and Instagram under Rock That Relationship and go to our website at rockthatrelationship.com for updated episodes and more great information.
Thanks for listening. Now go rock those relationships.